Now, for the past 2 years, Nike has been backing Olympic gold medalist Eliud Kipchoge, his attempt to complete a marathon in 2 hours. Now, in May, he finished the race in a spectacular 2 hours and 25 seconds, leaving him just 25 seconds off breaking that two-hour barrier. Joining me now, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College Dublin, Luke O'Neill, who's going to explain the science of speed. And also, we're going to talk about women and testosterone.
That's right. Great topics, but aren't they in athletics?
Great topics. But now, let's talk about Nike and what they did.
This is a lovely one. But if you're a biochemist, can you get muscles to work better, I suppose, is the question. Yeah. And will humans ever run a sub-2-hour marathon? That's the mission for this. And Nike, who else are sponsoring it?
They're spending millions on this. Roger Bannister,
yep.
He fell across the line to beat the 4-minute mile.
And he did.
People said it couldn't be done, it would never be done. He did it, and then they all started doing it.
They did. And in this marathon attempt, Pat, the guy was running 4:34 during Kipchoge.
So over
26 miles. So just Bannister, sadly, maybe it's psychological to break that barrier or whatever. So can Kipchoge do it is the big question. And of course, Nike are putting millions into this for obvious reasons.
Now, they did cheat a bit, didn't they?
This
wasn't your city marathon course.
No, it wouldn't stand if the record was broken. And by the way, the record is Kipchoge's 2 hours, 2 minutes and 57 seconds is the record for the moment.
That's a
normal, regular marathon. Now, this is in a flat track. It's in Monza, actually. That racing track they're doing this on. He's got six guys in front of him in an arrowhead formation. They've shown an arrowhead of people breaks the wind resistance a bit. There's a car slightly ahead of them.
A Tesla
car, inevitably with a clock on it.
No, but there's another reason. The Tesla has no exhaust. So in terms of the oxygen going into your lungs, no contaminants there. So that would give them a bit of a help as well.
Very clever. And they spent millions testing this in wind tunnels. Can you believe how a runner is running in wind tunnels? They heat 30 pacers ahead of him, switching in six at a time, would switch in and out in this arrowhead. And he's running in the middle of them. And that breaks down the resistance. And that was thought to be the optimum way to do it.
But of course, being Nike, there are shoes.
There are shoes, and the shoe is called a Zoom Vaporfly Elite running shoe. Right, this is the shoes he was wearing, and it's a very special technology, a special curve on the shoe, and he rolls along instead of running, kind of, they say. You know, it's kind of a strange way of moving is more optimal. And they reckon it gives a 4% advantage, that running shoe, compared to the regular Nike. So if you wear that kind of shoe, you get a 4% benefit from wearing. They're claiming, anyway, that that's the case with their running
shoe. But still, in spite of all the help and keeping an eye on the clock and all the rest of it, he missed it by 25 seconds.
And it's interesting, they paid him $1 million, Pat, to try it. That's the first thing, right? Because he missed the London Marathon for this. And they would have given him a second million if he did it. Isn't that great? So he's 26 seconds off $1 million if he managed to do it. You know, it doesn't seem to bother him. I think he's pretty well off anyway from all the sponsorships and things. But he would have got $2 million if he'd managed to achieve it.
Now, what do we know of the biochemical inhibitors to actually running faster longer?
It's our muscles, as ever, Pat. The muscles have a certain capacity, Things like myosin is a protein in muscle that you need for really strong muscles. And it's the recovery time, by the way, when you twitch and go back to normal and twitch again. And lots of work's going into trying to understand what muscles are made of and can we modify them. Now, we can do it in mice, by the way. You can stick a gene to help muscles grow in a mouse. You get a super mouse. The ultimate doping might be genetic, terrifyingly. They might modify some of these muscle proteins and make the muscle more efficient, And that study is ongoing at the moment.
So if they do that, that would be much harder to detect.
Indeed it would. Indeed it would. It's possible now with these mice, amazingly. They can make mice that are 10 times stronger than a regular mouse by changing some of these muscle features genetically. Mm. So the worry is that doping might go down that road. It would be devastating if that happened to her.
Now, anyone who's ever run knows that if you go out too fast, you get lactic acid buildup in your muscles and that's it. Your race is over, effectively. You've lost.
Exactly, yeah.
Because you've got to slow down and try to recover. Your body has to wash out the lactic acid and then you go again. However, if you go out at the right pace, the lactic acid doesn't build up and off you go.
Yeah, it's all about pacing, as ever. And you make lactic acid, your muscle becomes anaerobic, it's called. There's not enough oxygen and you start to burn glucose in a different way and you make lactic acid instead. And this is what makes you stiff, by the way, when you finish exercise. Yeah. And that stiffness that you feel, that's lactic acid build up in the tissues, and the tissue doesn't, it's a bit acidic, it doesn't like this. Yeah. So it's all about pacing. Generate the right amount of energy from the glucose is what the trick is. And the muscle's burning glucose feverishly. Of course, if you're running a marathon, the level of energy use is massive there. And the wall, by the way, Pat, as you switch to, think of glycogen, your liver has a glucose glucose store. It's called glycogen. Yeah. When you hit the wall, you burned all the glucose up in your blood. You know, the Lucozade or whatever it is all gone. Yeah. You switch to burning your own endogenous glucose in your body. Now you feel this awful feeling of sort of
exhaustion. But you get
exhaustion.
Through the wall.
You get, we have evolved, you see, to survive if glucose is low. Obviously, it's this all about in the savannas of Africa, by the way, you know, and running endlessly. And you can burn your own glucose reserves because eventually that runs out and then you're going to be in big trouble. Mm. And some of these marathon runners are very unhealthy, ultimately, because they're doing too many marathons and they're wearing down their bodies after time, you know, and not using the right nutrition and stuff. And the science of food is key to this and how much nutrition they have.
Now, where you're born has an awful lot to do with your ability to run great marathons.
Well, that's the big question. The other great thing I read recently, these East Africans, remember the famous Gabra Selassie, these guys? Yeah. Why were East Africans so good at 10,000 metres and these longer distances? Was it genetic? Was one question. Yeah. And they don't think it is. Strangely, they don't think it's in their genes. That's the first thing.
They all have these stick-long legs, you know, not terribly muscular by the look of it.
Yeah.
Not bulked anyway.
Yeah, they're slender. There's something about the long-leggedness that helps a tiny bit, but that doesn't seem to be the, you know, plenty of people that are slender who have other things and then they're not quite as good as these guys, you know. And it looks like it might be altitude. They live at higher altitudes all their lives and that helps them because their body adapts to the altitude.
So then they come down to lower levels and they get an oxygen-rich environment for them.
They do indeed, yeah, because when you're at altitude, you need to make more red blood cells at altitude because the air is a bit thinner and then you need more oxygen. And then when you go to normal sea level, you burn oxygen feverishly. Then again, you know, it's wonderful. The second thing that they've got, of course, is commitment. It's economic, they reckon, because these are poor countries.
Yeah.
And these people are dying to win, you know, and succeed and so on.
And you see them, I mean, Turkey, I think, is represented by a huge cohort of African athletes who don't live in Turkey, don't speak Turkish.
Absolutely.
And yet run under the Turkish banner. Yeah.
A great one, Fab, is the average Ethiopian runs to school as a child. This is strange. Yeah. An average of 3 to 6 miles a day they're running to school and back, right, from a very early age. That gives them this advantage because they're used to running all that. Yeah. And it must modify their muscles in some way that from childhood, I guess. And then when they become adults, they can run even better, I guess. That's the second. That was the big factor they found in the study, by the way. Yeah. Running to school in the morning was very advantageous for a runner.
Now, the question is on this two-hour marathon, it probably, if he's only 25 seconds away, someone's going to do it.
Absolutely, just a matter of time. He nearly got there. At 18 miles, he was going to break it for definite, you know, and they were timing him every second. Can you imagine how tormented he was by this big clock in front of him, you know? And he was running at a certain pace, you see, and he almost did it. He was just 26 seconds out. He'd attempt it again, by the way, you know, and probably in 3 or 4 months. It took 7 months of preparation, by the way, this attempt, you know, whatever he was doing for the 7 months. So he will go again, and it's only a matter of time before you break the two. But it won't count, as we say, because it's on this strange set of circumstances.
But of course, it'll sell a lot of shoes.
Absolutely. That's the big motivation.
Okay. Now let's move on to testosterone and women. There's a woman called Castor Semenya, who in her youth as a teenager was subject to all sorts of embarrassing tests because they weren't sure whether she was a man or a woman.
They weren't. Now, she's a very interesting case. She is a woman for definite. Now, how do we define a woman? But scientifically, you might think it's obvious. It's 2 X chromosomes, whereas men have a Y and an X. That's the main definition for male versus female. But it gets much more complicated because it's to do with testosterone as well. And she, for some reason, her body makes a huge amount of testosterone naturally.
Yeah.
And all our bodies make testosterone, and women do as well, by the way. People don't realise.
But massive testosterone, I mean, they talk about sexual characteristics, secondary sexual characteristics. I mean, people with testosterone, men, tend to have bigger jaws, tend to be, you know, bigger muscles.
Yep.
I mean, quite honestly, a bit like a man, and she is.
She is. She looks like a man.
Broad at the shoulder, narrow at the hip.
That's right, exactly. And lean muscle mass is higher because of testosterone. Like men have more testosterone, their muscles are a bit different to women's muscles, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a spectrum, and women will have on average, women have half the testosterone that you and I have as men. We always knew women had this, you see. But she's got a huge amount. It's called hyperandrogenism, is the name of this particular condition, and our body makes those of testosterone.
Yeah. No, she's not alone. There's another one, Chand.
There is an Indian woman, and she was the one who objected. So they were going to start testing women for testosterone levels as athletes and then maybe exclude them or not give them the medal or whatever it might be, you know, and that's unfair because it's natural. You know, why would you do that? She objected and said, show me the evidence that high testosterone equals high performance, and now they've got the evidence. That's what's just been published.
There was an interview I heard with a woman, an American, who had this high testosterone thing, and she was an athlete. I think it was on maybe off the ball, and she went off the she went on to this testosterone reduction course, and she couldn't win a race.
Well, that's the thing, exactly, and they're going to force these women, this is the controversial bit, potentially force them into hormone replacement therapy to get the hormone level down to a normal level. Now, is that ethical? There's all these debates happening, should they do this or not, because these women aren't cheating, you know. They aren't doping themselves.
It'd be like asking, in one way, Usain Bolt to knock 6 inches off his legs,
exactly, you know? Or a boxer, you know, lose lose some muscle mass and you won't win anymore, you know. So it's a bit controversial. Other women athletes say it's very unfair. This woman's got 10 times the amount of stuff I've got and she's going to beat me every time. You know, it's not a level playing field. So that's very controversial.
The reason for this is, of course, that women have been known to dope with testosterone.
Yep.
And they now have coordinated winning with testosterone levels.
They have indeed. Yeah, there was a study just published this week. They looked at 1,300 female athletes, right?
Yeah.
Professional athletes, and looked at what they won and what they didn't win. And there was a big correlation with testosterone. In other words, the higher the level, the more likely you would win. And it gives them up to a 4% advantage. Now, guess what the events were, Pat? It's a bit obvious. The hammer was one event, you know. and the pole vault was another. But also the 400 metres and the hurdles was especially one where the testosterone level correlates with getting medals, basically, you see. Yeah. And that gives us the evidence we need now to say it is down to testosterone. It's a striking thing. I mean, it's only 4% advantage, you see. But that's enough at that elite athlete level.
I mean, they used to make jokes about the Eastern European athletes in the old Soviet era that, you know, the women had to be very careful to make sure they shaved, not their armpits, but their faces.
Exactly,
before
yes.
they went
they
out.
They were well doped, I tell yeah. you. And half the cases of doping in women is testosterone or an androgen of some kind. So the women know they take it. And that increases muscle mass. It increases visual acuity, interestingly. You get sharper vision, and that's good for certain events, I guess, is the second thing. And the third thing is drive and ambition, Pat. It makes them much more aggressive and competitive. And that slight increase in competitiveness is enough to beat the other athletes, you see. So yeah. there's all kinds of benefits in that way.
What has happened now with between the, if you like, the conventional, normally testosterone-leveled women, that they just, there's three women who look more like men and they come one, two, three in the events.
Yeah.
And the other women just regard the person who's fourth as first.
As the real winner, yeah, among themselves. It's a badge of honour, isn't it, to come forth
in
that race.
I mean, in terms of the prize money, and there is money involved, they are feeling much aggrieved about
absolutely.
All of this, because they can't win a race.
Some of them are, and this is not fair, you know, what can we do about it? Now, it looks like they might do something. The Athletics Federation will now insist on a hormone replacement protocol, which is, and the question is, should they be tampering in a natural process or not? But if you're an athlete and you keep losing, maybe your view is something should be done here to help them, I guess. Mm.
Or people who want to enter races of whatever kind, they have to submit to certain criteria. And if you're outside of those criteria, you can't enter.
Exactly, and it could be specifically about testosterone in women only. Like, you wouldn't stop boxers who've got stronger muscles from competing, for instance, but you would actually look at the testosterone level as a measurable thing and then maybe exclude them or insist on them having replacement therapy.
I mean, the men have doped with testosterone too.
The anabolic steroids, famously, but those weightlifters, huge muscle mass builds up on them as well. Yeah,
and
to
they,
increase
if they're caught, are thrown out.
They are thrown out, precisely.
But then
that's
doping.
That's doping.
Whereas the other's natural.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's real cheating, I guess.
All right. I don't know where this is taking us. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you very much.